Hello and welcome to the Euractiv Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News team.
This week, the final CAP vote, the soil strategy and antimicrobial resistance.
So, Gerardo, I hear that something might be happening next week. Something maybe interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. Your sources are good.
As always.
Yeah. There's finally the last
Wait, are you going to sing it?
No.
What do you mean?
We're going to sing it when it's going to be signed and sealed.
Okay.
But yeah.
Our loyal listeners know what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's also true that our loyal listeners could be a bit, I don't know, confused, no? Because, I mean, they could say, oh, the common agricultural policy, but you say last November that there was an important vote at the European Parliament. So what are you talking about? Yeah, actually, the vote in November 2020 was on the position adopted by the Parliament ahead of the final negotiations. It's very complex. I mean, the legislative procedure.
It's so complicated. Every time I think it's coming to the end, it's not. There's always something around the corner, except...
That's true. No, it's true, but it's also... That's why it's difficult to cover EU policies, because there are so many milestones in the legislative procedure that you can report on, that readers might be confused. So again, just to do a quick recap, in November 2020, the famous veggie burger vote, just to be
great
clear.
Great times.
I'm saying veggie burger because it was such a hype on the one tiny amendment dealing with the veggie burgers.
What a time to be an agri-food reporter.
Yeah,
indeed. Honestly, it was absolute peak.
It was everywhere. It was in the BBC and Le Monde and so on. And in that moment was actually not even close to the finishing line, because it was, again, as I said, the adoption of the position that Parliament negotiators would have, again, it was like
the beginning of the end.
Yeah, the beginning of the end. Then there were the interinstitutional negotiations, so basically European Parliament, the rapporteurs of the European Parliament, and the member states, represented first by Germany, the German minister, and then by the Portuguese minister, the rotating presidency of the European Union.
Which is a whole other story.
Yeah, indeed. And then there was the final agreement, the final compromise, when they struck a deal. Member states in the European Parliament in late June, if I remember correctly. And that wasn't the end, but it was really close to the end. Then the minister, I think they approved the... Because when you reach an agreement, when the two lawmakers of the European Union, so European Parliament and the European the Council of the European Union, when they reach an agreement, this agreement has to be finally endorsed by their respective members, no? So in the case of the member states, the Agri-Fish Council, so the gathering of the EU ministers, EU agriculture ministers. And in the case of the European Parliament, the member of the European Parliament. So where we are at, at the final endorsement by the... At
the final endorsement. Because I felt like we said final gap down about six times now.
So any guess, Tash, on how it will end?
Oof. Good question. I mean, you know, I think in all likelihood, we're going to go, and it's in Strasbourg, the vote, so I'm going next week. I think in all likelihood, it's going to, after this long and winding road all the way to this CAP reform, the likelihood is that it's going to pass, right? Although there is definitely a bit of pushback. People are fighting right till the end. The anti-cap campaigners are fighting right to the end, tooth and nail.
Our friends from the, what was the name? The Vote the Cap Down.
Yeah. So they're still holding on to hope. They're still, I think even today I received something, you know, urging citizens to write to the MEPs to ask them to vote.
On Friday,
the cap down.
They're doing
exactly. A rally.
No, it's like
a protest. Yeah.
Protest, yeah.
There's a
outside
protest
the parliament in Brussels.
There's a protest in Brussels on Friday, and I think there's also a protest that's going to happen alongside all the votes and everything in the plenary in Strasbourg next week. So yeah, definitely not going down without a fight. Would it be enough to sway it?
Yeah.
I think it's unlikely, but it would make my week in Strasbourg really interesting if it
that's
did.
That's true. Because, I mean,
at the same time, though, I mean, wow, yeah. what a monumental thing that would be, yeah, if it didn't pass now. I mean, for talking about the amount of energy and work that's gone into it, but also talking about for farmers who need to have some kind, yeah, of certainty of something that's going to start in 2023. And, you know, if it was not to pass now, there's different schools of thought about this, but I mean, if it was not to pass now, that would be,
yeah,
a lot. I mean, it would keep us in a job for, yeah, a few more years.
Oh, I mean, strategic plans. I'd say that these are the kind of votes that not that are interesting to report on, because I mean, it's more that, you know, they have some folkloric component, no? They have protests and they have very strong position. I expect, for instance, in the debate, super strong and scathing accusation from the Greens and a solid defense from socialist rapporteurs and so on. Mm-hmm. So that could actually, it's interesting to follow them, to follow this kind of debates. For sure, you're not gonna get bored. And there was actually an interesting conference this week hosted
by
European Parliament.
Tell me more. No, I bet it was moderated by some great people.
The I was there, of course.
We were there.
Yeah, we were there. And we basically moderated this conference on what was it? Strategic plans. And, there were three panels on for each portions of the common agricultural policy. So basically strategic plans, common market organization, and horizontal regulation. We had some quite good feedback, and because I mean they were also invited to speak representatives from national parliaments.
Yeah, that was interesting, because obviously in the push to make everything, you know, to shift some of the responsibility from the EU to member states, is, you know, becoming increasingly, it's always important, but it's becoming increasingly important to hear the perspective of member states. So they had this kind of twinning kind of idea where you had one MEP speaking and then you had a couple of national parliamentarians speaking and then an MEP again, so you had the mix of the two different viewpoints, and it brought some really kind of interesting perspectives from different member states, and a real range of member states as well, you know, because I think during my session there were some from Sweden and other sessions from Greece and from Italy and from all over the place. So definitely brought some interesting perspectives to the table.
Well, particularly on the, of course, I mean, the strategic plans are the cornerstone of the entire common agricultural policy.
Yeah.
Again, it was recalled that there are two main innovative features. On one hand, the shift from compliance system to result-based system in delivering the common agricultural policy objectives. And on the other hand, the involvement of member states in planning, or even evaluating the common agricultural policy investments. And again, this huge challenge can cause a delay in the adoption of the strategic plans. We recently reported on that. No? Mm-hmm. There are some countries that are really struggling to meet the deadline, the end of the year deadline to present the strategic plans, although at the end of the conference, Wojciechowski seemed commissioner, the agriculture commissioner.
He had some interesting remarks, didn't he, at the end there?
He expected in 3 months, he said 3 months, and then he said in a few months. The initial observations from the commission on these strategic plans, basically. Again, it's not something mandatory, but it's basically like an opinion from the commission on what they receive. But he said something interesting on the possibility to what was it?
Rejecting a plan.
Yeah,
which is interesting because before we've reported, I can't remember when it was, a while ago now, that actually I haven't heard him say that he would reject a plan. To the contrary, when I asked him once about whether he would reject a plan based on the fact that it didn't fulfill enough of the Green Deal objectives and it wasn't closely aligned enough to the Green Deal, he said that, you know, he wouldn't reject a plan. Instead, he would want to work with member states and have dialogue and kind of persuade them that way, you know, with the power of persuasion. But during his intervention here in this parliamentary hearing that we're talking about, he actually said he would reject a cap plan on the basis if the funds were shifted too much from small farmers. So if too much money or too much funding was taken from small farmers, or was restricted, I think his words were, you know, funding was restricted to farmers, then that would be enough for him to reject a strategic plan, which is the first time I've heard him say, you know, that's my red line. That's what would cause a rejection. Which is really interesting. So he didn't say that for the Green Deal alignment, but he did say it on restricting funds for small farmers.
But we know that Wojciechowski major quart is a small farmer. Come on.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But it's an interesting comparison. You know, where it's interesting to see where the priorities lie here for the commissioner.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, another thing that was recalled during the conference at the European Parliament by many member of national parliaments is that actually farmers must be at the center of this, the implementation, no? Because, I mean, we often speak about the EU lawmakers and the role of administrations, no?
Yeah.
Actually, one very interesting thing that has been said was coming from Eric Andrieu, one of the rapporteurs of the common market of the common agricultural policy. It's basically the common market organization file. And he said something strategic plans shouldn't be just administrative tasks or administrative tests. They must be strategic, you know. Basically, they need to reach some kind of a strategically important goal in the transition, no? And it was actually endorsed, this approach, by Wojciechowski in the end.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to see
all
the outcome.
Our coverage.
Natasha will be there in Strasbourg together with our colleague Magdalena. They're going to bring us, including me, all the news from the Berg, from Strasbourg.
But the news this week's not all a focus on the cap, because this week also saw the unveiling of the EU's soil strategy, which is very exciting because, as everyone who knows me knows, soil enthusiast. Let's go with soil enthusiast. Anyway, so the EU unveiled its soil strategy this week, which outlined plans for a soil health law by 2023. Which is designed to bring soil on the same legal footing as air and water. So that's interesting because, you know, so this strategy is basically trying to offer an overarching policy framework at the EU level for soil restoration, for assessing the status of soils, and taking action against degradation. So yeah, this introduction of the EU soil law by 2023 is going to be fairly revolutionary, depending how it all pans out. Obviously, there's a lot that can, you know, change between now and then. But basically, if this is backed by the European Parliament and member states, this will become the first EU-wide law protecting soil. So there was actually an attempt a little while ago. What was it, 10 years ago?
After several attempts.
Yeah, there was several attempts because... You know more about this, Gerardo. There was about 10 years ago, there was an attempt at creating this, which got blocked, right?
10 years ago, yeah, there was the attempt from the former environmental commissioner, Potocnik, Yanis Potocnik. The commission at the time, they tried to create this EU-wide legal framework for soil protection, and it was scrapped by national governments. I mean, it's not that common right now that the Commission lose, let's say, the battle with the European Parliament.
With member states.
But actually, five, six, 7 years ago, it was quite common, but it could happen that basically something will, you know, was rejected when it arrived at that's why there are some topics like soil, but even like, for instance, the nutritional labeling, you know, they're not really new. And it's every time you touch on these topics, you basically, it seems like something that it's in the air and you already know something about it. And that's because they're all dossiers abandoned from the past. You know, it's not like carbon farming. Okay. It's something, it's not new, of course, but I mean, it's something that they're trying to deal with that right now, no? But soil protection has always been one of the main objective from the commission, but I mean something that the commission
it's been a priority.
The same again,
or been an aspiration.
So let's see if this time will work.
And actually, Environment Commissioner Virginia Sinkevicius was asked during a press conference this week about the fact that there were previous failed attempts and, you know, what makes it different this time, basically. And he was quite positive. He was saying, you know, that right now is a completely different situation, a completely different political landscape. He was saying the commission had taken a lot of pains to engage with all stakeholders this time. And he sees that the outcome, he's very, very hopeful, I suppose, that the outcome this time is going to be really different. And this, so the strategy was, I would say, quite widely welcomed. Obviously, some stakeholders expressed some concerns, but it was widely welcomed. And actually, we spoke with one such stakeholder. We spoke with MEP Martin Helsick to hear his reaction to the strategy.
Of course, I would like to see the proposal on the table yesterday, so to say, because we cannot permit ourselves to postpone this file. Our short-term actions require long-term thinking, and this is the case of the soils. And that's where I think we need to act fast. At the same time, I understand that the Commission needs sufficient time to prepare this. Just a year ago, Commission didn't even want to admit that they'll be tabling such a proposal, so it is a step forward. But I believe that the 2023, especially the first half of 2023, needs to be the hard deadline. Any additional delay would be loudly protested and pushed against by us members of the Parliament. Has the Commission listened to the Parliament? Well, I think the step forward from this Commission, that they are ready to, and they committed themselves to tabling the soil health law, is a sign that they listen, at least in this case. Now, it's not certainly always the case, but here I believe that we have a grounds for a cautious optimism. From the substance of the strategy, I have to say that I would like to see a strong and firmer commitment for the legal base of Lucas. We know its importance. It needs to be an integral part of the strategy in the long term. And also, I would prefer more precise wording regarding objectives, conditions, funding, and other elements. It's a bit still too vague. Now, in a summary, the solar strategy, it is good and important step forward, but let's not forget, this is only a strategy. This is not legally binding text. So it's a starting point. We really need to watch for the commission, at the commission, what are going to be the future activities, how the strategy is going to be implemented, and how, at the end of the day, will help our soul. Also through a soul framework, legal soul framework that we desperately need in Europe.
And on Thursday, the World Antimicrobial Awareness Week started. It's going to last until the 24th of November, and it's a WHO Awareness Week that will focus on spreading awareness about the threat of antimicrobial resistance, which has been labeled as the as a silent threat, basically. Consider that AMR, antimicrobial resistance, claims 33,000 lives in the EU every year and is also responsible for an annual economic loss estimated at around 1.5 billion of euros. And it is expected to become a bigger killer than cancer by 2050. And last week we had an interview for the Health Brief, the sister of the Agri-Food Brief, which I now, if you're not subscribed to the Health Brief yet,
a good plug there, Gerardo. Well done.
So we had this interview with Marta Hugas, who's the chief scientist of the EU's Food Safety Agency, and we talk about the antimicrobial resistance. Let's hear what is her take on
that. From a scientific perspective, we know what is needed. We had an opinion some years ago together with the Medicines Agency that the we could say the three lines of defense are reducing the use of antimicrobials in food-producing animals, replacing them with other possible compounds, organic acid, probiotics, so replace the way we treat these infections, and also rethinking the livestock production system, which is crucial for the future of animal and public health. So that was called the Ronafa opinion, and that was clear from science perspective what could be done. But there is no size fits all, and successful strategies follow an integrated multifaceted approach, which considers the local livestock production system and involves also relevant stakeholders, but also needs to be considered at a global level, because then we trade animals from other places and we might also trade resistance. We also travel from one place to the other.
And that's all from us this week. And this week, like every week, the Euractiv Agri-Food podcast was produced by Euractiv's Agri-Food news team. That's Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foot, with the help of our podcast producer, Evie Curie. You can also find this podcast on all major streaming platforms. That's Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Thanks for being with us today, and see you next week.